This week on Art of the Air features an artist known as the Queen of Color, Denise Peterson, sharing her art journey and her South Shore Arts Atrium exhibit in September. Next, a return visit with violinist Nick Orbowich and the 24th Annual Michigan City Chamber Music Festival in August. Our spotlights on Lakeshore Community Concerts 2025-26 season.
Express yourself through art and show the world your heart. Express yourself through art and show the world your heart. You're in the know with Esther and Larry. Art on the air today. Stay in the know with Larry and Esther. Art on the air our way. Express yourself through art and show the world your heart. Express yourself through art and show the world.
Welcome. You're listening to Art on the Air on Lakeshore Public Media, 89.1 FM, WVLP 103.1 FM, our weekly program covering the arts and arts events throughout Northwest Indiana and beyond. I'm Larry Breckner of New Perspectives Photography, right alongside here with Esther Golden of The Nest in Michigan City.
Aloha, everyone.
We're your hosts for Art on the Air. Art on the Air is supported by an Indiana Arts Commission Arts Project Grant, South Shore Arts, and the National Endowment for the Arts. Art on the Air is heard every Sunday at 7 p.m. on Lakeshore Public Media, 89.1 FM, also streaming live at lakeshorepublicmedia.org, and is available on Lakeshore Public Media's website as a podcast. Also heard on Friday at 11 a.m. and Monday at 5 p.m. on WVLP 103.1 FM, streaming live at wvlp.org. Our spotlight interviews are also heard Wednesdays on Lakeshore Public Media. Information about Art on the Air is available at our website, breck.com/AOTA. That includes a complete show archive, spotlight interviews, plus our show is available on multiple podcast platforms, including NPR One. Please like us on Facebook, Art on the Air, WVLP, for information about upcoming shows and interviews. I'd like to welcome to Art of the Air Spotlight. We have them returning for their 2025-26 season, and it's the Lakeshore Concerts, formerly Munster Concerts and formerly the Handham Concert Association. And we have with us today Karen Pochark. She's the coordinator or director of that, and she will tell us all information about their whole new season coming up. And again, this year it will be at Highlands Monbeck Auditorium, one of my former stomping grounds before I was at Munster. So, Carolyn, welcome back to Art of the Air Spotlight.
Well, thank you, Larry and Esther. I appreciate being able to be on your show. And as you know, our mission is to cultivate an interest in good music and entertainment, which we feel we do. We have six wonderful shows lined up for this next 25-26 season. Our first program is on Sunday, September 21st, with a group called the Next Generation Leahy. And they're a family group. We had their parents here, and now it's the children who are going to be performing. Then in October, we have Lauren Jelenkovich, which is October 4th, and she is opera and musical theater and has a terrific soprano voice. Then in January on the 11th, we have How Sweet It Is, which is a tribute to James Taylor. That should be really a lot of fun. Then in February, we have Mid-Atlantic Men, and that's February 13th, and they have kind of done musical shows, theater, all that kind of thing from like our favorite time since we're old. Then we have Chris Ruggiero on Thursday, March 5th. He is singing from the golden age of rock and roll into the timeless music of the 50s, the 60s, and the 70s. And then we will finish up our season on March 19th with Here Comes the Judds, a tribute. And as you know, they will be singing the Judds songs. We will, as Larry already told you, our programs will be at the Highland High School, which is 9135 Erie Street. We are very pleased with them. They have terrific sound, plenty of seats. All their kids and their director are just fantastic to work with. It is not too late to get your ticket. We have not mailed the tickets out yet. They will be being mailed out in mid-August. It's $75 for an adult subscription, which includes all six programs. And if you have children, you can add $15 on for your family program, And that extra 15 allows you to bring your children to all six concerts also. Wow. So we're very excited about this new season. We feel like we've picked a lovely variety of things for you to listen to. There's something for everyone's taste. Our Sunday matinees, which are The Next Generation Leahy and James Taylor, start at 2 o'clock. The doors open at 1:30. And the other shows are at 7 o'clock, doors opening at 6:30. Matt Domasica, who's the manager of the theater, is wonderful to work with. You will enjoy seeing him and seeing their lovely auditorium. And we hope that you, if you haven't gotten a season subscription yet, you will do so. We have tickets available on our website, which is lakeshoreconcerts.org. And you can purchase your tickets there. Or you can contact myself at 219-932-9795. My name's Carolyn. Or you can contact our ticket chairman. Her name is Marie, and her phone number is 219-923-2078. I hope that we are able to see you in the audience come September. And I hope that you enjoy, I'm sure you will enjoy every single concert we have to offer. If you want to stop by and see us in August on the 5th, we will have a booth at the Munster's Night Out Against Crime, and we will be happy to give you information. You can fill out a raffle ticket and possibly win two season subscriptions. So we've got opportunities for you, and we hope that you are interested and want to do this.
I have a really quick question, Carolyn. Are you viewing the season in person? Are you going to view these, or is it still done on Zoom?
To choose the entertainers?
The entertainers, yes.
We have been doing it on Zoom. As a matter of fact, this year, their convention is not going to be live. It's going to be totally online.
And you're still working with live entertainment, good old Laura Anderson down there, correct?
Right, live on stage. Yep, and they're so easy to work with. I mean, very easy to work with. We love it. If anything comes up, they take care of it. So we have no complaints working with that company. And we are just going to look at the 26-27 offerings on August 4th. So we're having a little watch party.
Excellent.
To get together and see it.
Yeah, Laura is great people. I worked with her for years when I had you guys at Munster. And so always fun to work with her. So quickly recapping, you can find out information about the concerts at lakeshoreconcerts.org. You can call Carolyn at her number, 219-932-9795, and find out information all about the 25-26 season Lakeshore Community Concerts. Again, going to be at my old stomping grounds, one of which Highland High School's Monbeck Auditorium, and Matt Domasica, one of my students from Munster, who I placed in that job there as auditorium director. Carolyn, it's a real pleasure to have you part of Art on the Air.
Well, thanks to you and Esther. I really appreciate getting to speak with you again. Thank you for your time. Thank you for listening to me. And thank you for considering Lakeshore Community Concerts. And I hope I see you.
No, it's always a pleasure seeing you.
You too.
Art on the Air Spotlight and the complete one-hour program on Sunday is brought to you by Emberforge Consulting, thoughtful marketing and digital learning built to express your purpose and grow your reach. Learn more at emberforgeconsulting.com/grow.
This is Janet Davies, formerly of ABC7 and now the Dunes Arts Foundation, and you're listening to Art on the Air on Lakeshore Public Media 89.1 FM and on WVLP 103.1 FM.
We are happy to welcome Denise Peterson to Art on the Air. Denise is an award-winning artist based in Illinois. She is now a freelance artist, muralist, pet portrait artist with a background as a high-end finishing artist working in both residential and commercial spaces. Thank you for joining us on Art on the Air. Aloha and welcome, Denise. It's really nice meeting you.
Thank you. It's wonderful to meet you as well. Thanks for having me.
And nice to see you again.
Nice to see you.
So we always like to tee up our show by finding out the background number. People like call it their origin story. So Denise, tell us how you got from where you were to where you are now.
Okay. Well, I can say that probably a few of my earliest childhood memories revolve around me being obsessed with somebody else doing artwork. And one memory, I must have been 4 years old. My sister wasn't even born yet. I have one younger sister. So my parents and I, we just moved into this tiny little home, their first home in Elmwood Park, Illinois. And I remember one day, this old Italian gentleman came to the house and he just set up on our staircase that led to the second floor and he started painting a mural. I don't remember if I even knew he was coming, anything like that. I just remember being transfixed by watching this man in my home paint this mural. And it was a very simple palette. It was very, I would say, whimsical. It was simply like a tree with branches winding up the staircase, basically, or the wall of the staircase, with a couple of birds. And it was reminiscent of the color palette my parents had in the living room at the time. So there were, you know, coppers, but he was using like copper paint, gold leaf paint. And just watching this man, I just stood there all day and watched him thinking, I want to do this. Didn't know how, but you know, that was a very prominent early childhood memory. And another one would be following my older cousin around constantly when I was younger. And he was a musician, he was an artist, and the whole family could be together hanging out, and he would just have everyone tuned out. And he'd be focused on his sketching. And I would just watch him. The same thing, like that kind of motivated me to pick up colored pencils, markers, whatever it was, and start imitating him. You know, wanted to emulate what he was doing. So been drawing basically, you know, as long as I can remember. Art class was my favorite class in elementary school. By the time I got to high school, my family had moved from one suburb to another, moved out to Addison, Illinois, and I knew by the time I was going for freshman orientation that I would just focus on art classes as much as I could because they had a great program, and I just knew that it would happen somehow. That's what I wanted to do. So did that, you know, throughout all of high school. I won outstanding senior in art. I remember that. And
was it in painting? Were you painting or what other disciplines were you doing?
The one thing I didn't do when I was in high school was sculpture. And I regret that. I wish I had taken, but I had taken every form of painting class they offered. They had a studio class that they called, I think they just called it Studio One or Art Studio. And, you know, different mediums, I suppose, during that. But every year I had, you know, from watercolor to oil painting and really wonderful teachers there too. Really people who were just very supportive and inspirational. And I went to the American Academy of Art after that, along with a number of fellow students from my high school. I mean, there were, oh my gosh, at one point there were almost a dozen of us from Addison Trail going to, you know, the American Academy of Art. And I was at the Academy from 1988 to early 1992. Back then it was a two-year program. But I stayed for two programs. I wanted 2 degrees. So I stayed a little bit longer than other people would occasionally. But so I did that. And after that, I would say within a year of graduating from the academy, I got my first job at a studio, Skyline Design, which is where I met Billy Pozzo. I know you've had Billy on here in the past. And along with many, many talented artists, I'm still in touch with so many of them today. Really wonderful group of people. And I was at Skyline for about 6.5 years. And when I was there, I would go back and forth between working in the painting department, the mural department, and their graphic design department, where I was part of a team who, how do I say this? Basically, the main commodity for Skyline then, and I think now, was architectural glass. So we would cut the patterns on these huge computer beds that, you know, would be basically like laid out onto the glass and sandblasted, and, you know, design work went from there. But so I spent my time doing those two living those two worlds at Skyline.
You know, I want to ask, when you were, like, when you graduated from the academy, were you focusing on any particular style? Was it more figurative still life, kind of like it is now? Or were you into abstract at all? What things were you painting?
I went through a brief period of abstract when I was in my early 20s. And I can see myself doing that again at some point in the future. But I would have to say I was always drawn more towards figurative art, because I remember being a kid and taking my dad's Golf Digest magazines and, you know, whichever golfer was on the cover of that month, I would sit, grab my sketchbook, go out by the, you know, the weeping willow tree at my great grandmother's house up in Twin Lakes, Wisconsin, and sit all day by myself and just draw. And I mean, that's one thing I have been completely content my entire life. If I'm not playing with my friends or cousins or whomever, I am so happy to just be alone and be with my sketchbook. And so, yeah, I would say mostly I was more interested in figurative work.
With a job based in the arts, did you have time and space when you got home to continue your own personal art practice?
I did. So let's see. Back when I was at Skyline Design, I was there from about 93 to 99, I think the summer of 99. And I started participating in Around the Coyote. I don't know if you were familiar with those. Those were really fun art shows, festivals. And I was doing them back when the Ludwig Drum Factory was still like in existence. So I did that, you know, on occasion. So I would paint for myself here and there. And then after I left Skyline, I worked. So I went from one extreme where I was painting murals that were 50 feet long, you know, 50 feet by 4 feet, that would go into a bar somewhere across the country. And I went from that scale to working at Acme Design for several years in the early 2000s, where I would do small scale figurines. And what I did mainly there was paint these little figurines that would go to Bradford Exchange. You know, if you had the plates and the figurines people would buy for. So I did the masterpiece that, you know, would be sent overseas, and they would use that as the example of what they would follow. And when I was at Acme Design, I was given the best job title ever. I was given, on my business card, it read the Queen of Color. That was my job title. So I love that one. But yeah, I was there until about 2006. And then had a little turn of events. I think in the early, you know, 2000s, there was a plan I was going to move to California. So I left Acme on a full-time basis, but then it turned out that I didn't move to California. So now I'm here, I'm back in Chicago, and I need work. So freelance work wasn't cutting it, you know, to pay the bills. So I took an office job. And I took that office job that lasted between a couple of companies. I was in an office setting for about 10 years, and it was too long, but I did what I needed to do. You know, I that's the path I had to take, and that I would, on occasion, freelance, you know, with Acme or friends I had worked with at Skyline. I would, on occasion, freelance with them, but I really didn't paint consistently for myself during that period of time. I had, you know, good times and bad times with it, but I will tell you, I know a difference in myself when I'm painting and not, how content I am and how happy I am. So in about 2015, I left this last office job that I had and got a phone call from an old friend of mine from both the Academy and Acme Design. He was starting, you know, to do some work, asked if I'd be interested in helping. Lo and behold, got another phone call from another friend of mine from Skyline. You know, so the freelance work just started picking up. And that's what I've been doing for my quote unquote day job for the last 10 years. And it's been wonderful. So I would say within the last 5, 6, 7 years, I've really gotten back into painting for myself. And that's when the pet portraits started, you know, coming up, and do that a little more consistently. And I'd say the last few years, I've just I've grown to appreciate the skill that I have. And I am very protective right now of what I do. I have gotten to a point where I am happy with my skill level. I'm pleased with the style that I'm working in right now. And I'm just, the last year or so, I've been putting myself out there more and more. And I've had a very good response to my work. So
I know that's always, it's always excellent. It's a leap to do that, to put the work out into the public, but it's, the feedback you get is really terrific.
So
would you say that you're just kind of refining then what you're doing all the time, or?
I feel like it. I feel like, I'm happy with the work I'm putting out, mm-hmm. but I always feel like, if you know, like the goal is just out of reach, I need to get a little more detailed, or I need the edges blurred a little differently. I'm always tweaking, kind of trying to improve upon.
I would think because with dogs, so much is in the expression in the eyes. And so I can imagine that's an area of intensity on your part, intense scrutiny, I guess.
It is. It absolutely is. And I think one of the compliments I've heard the most frequently about the pet portrait work is the emotion that I capture in the eyes, which I love. I'll take it. I'll take that compliment. My husband calls me the dog whisperer because I just have this ability. I have no fear, with animals. I'm not foolish. I can read their body language, but I feel so, it's a very natural relationship. And I, when I'm doing the pet portrait work, ideally, and I know this can't always be the case, but ideally, I love to go meet the animal. If I could spend an afternoon or an hour or something with the animal and get to know their personality, that just helps me all the more.
So, and then the question I was going to then ask, which I think you just answered, but just to be sure, you then work from a photograph at some point, probably as the basis?
Yes. Yes. I will work from dozens of photographs if I need to. But having that opportunity to actually meet the animal always helps, or getting to know just if they've passed, just, I'd like to hear about them. I want to know what their personality was like.
Add any of that into the paintings, or because the paintings that I saw had sort of there weren't anything extra really in a lot of the paintings. Do you ever
I've done it on a few. There was one I did a few years ago where it was a little, I think Chihuahua mix. It was really cute. I had a little hat on him because she actually, the owner, like, had a little straw hat made for him, and he spent time out in her garden, and he had a favorite area. So in the painting, I put him wearing the little straw hat in a little flower bed, surrounded by his favorite flowers.
Well, I know Esther's going to ask about specifically, but I'm going to tee it up by talking about some of your other figurative work, like the water figure number 2, Transfiguration, Home, and Found Worth. And of course, Esther has the biggest question, I think, is about Ophelia. So maybe talk about that, and Esther can also ask about what she's interested in with Ophelia.
So the story with Ophelia came about, this was going back to mid-90s, going back quite some time here. I honestly cannot remember the moment that I had that idea. I just had different images of myself that I put myself in different positions, and I knew the feel of what I wanted to do. But there was this one specific pose with the woman lying on the ground, kind of curled up, and her head buried in between her arms. And she was painted as a literal body of water. So doing that, and then in the process of that, of course, the perfect title was, for me, it was Ophelia, because that just expressed the emotion, the feeling that I wanted to portray in the painting. And there was one year I had that at the Around the Coyote. And I remember it was the only painting I had in Around the Coyote that year. And so I was in my little booth all weekend long. And I remember one man walking the room, and he just kept coming back and coming back and coming back. And he wouldn't say a word to me. He would just stand there and stare at the painting, and he'd walk away, come back a little while later and do the same thing. And then finally, at one point, he just looks at me and says, "That's going to be a really hard one to top." And he just walks away. And I was so taken by that. I was like, thank you. I know he meant it as a compliment, but it almost kind of messed with me for a little while because it just stuck in my head. But the following year, a friend told me about a juried exhibition that she had heard about. And the theme of the juried exhibition was figurative abstraction. I mean, it was perfect for this painting. Juried by Ed Paschke. And I was like, wow, that's pretty incredible. So juried exhibition, the juror was Ed Paschke, perfect theme. I enter the painting, it gets accepted. I go to, deliver the painting, and it's at the Fine Arts Building Gallery in Chicago, which was just so, so beautiful. It was such a beautiful spot. And dropped the painting off, came back a couple of weeks later, opening night, and I walk in, and Ophelia has her own wall space. She has her own wall. And that to me was just, I couldn't have asked for anything better. It was such a beautiful moment. And later that night, Ed Paschke spoke in front of the painting. It was just such an honor, really, to be a part of that show. And then have it end by one of the gallerists purchasing the painting. It couldn't have been any better for me.
So is that a typical size for you? Because it's a significant sized piece.
Yes. And that is how I used to paint. And I stopped doing that for many years. And now I'm working my way back up to it. And holy cow, have I missed it. I love painting large scale. Love it.
Did you use a model for any of those figurative paintings, like Water Figure Number 2 and Ophelia?
Yeah, that was me.
Wow, okay.
That was me, yeah. Yep.
With your animal portraits, I assume a lot of those are commissioned, correct?
Correct. Mm-hmm, yeah. Sometimes
it was the first one? Was the first pet portrait your dog, or how did...
The very first pet portrait I ever did, yes, was one of my dogs. I used to have... Half a lifetime ago, I had two white German Shepherds, not together at separate times, but those were, of both of my German Shepherds, actually, those were the first handful of pet portraits I did, yeah.
So have you ever wanted to try a different medium than painting? You talked about that missing out on sculpture, but like, is there something else you say, well, I really like to try, what is that?
Encaustic. I've never tried encaustic painting, and it's so alien to my process. It's so different than anything I do. And I see a couple of artists on Instagram, and I just think it looks
so beautiful.
Like a lot of fun. Some of them are gorgeous.
So beautiful.
And I would really like one day to get back into pastel work. I used to use pastel work a lot when I was in school and for a few years out of school. I did portrait work in pastels. I miss it. But oil painting is just, it's just been my life.
That's quite luscious.
It is.
And you can't really capture some of the same thing using acrylics, although acrylics are sure is easier to work with. But there's something very special about oil.
I agree.
So you have some exhibits coming up, and one of which was local, but you have a few other things coming up. And tell us about what we can find some of those.
So what I'm really excited about is a solo show within the atrium at South Shore Arts Center. That will have an opening Thursday, September 4th from 6 to 8. And then the show officially runs or opens September 5th, Friday, September 5th through October 18th. And I am pretty certain that that will coincide with this year's salon show at South Shore Arts Center, which is what I took part in last year and how I became familiar with SSA. And that's where you and I met, Larry. So yeah, I'm really excited about that. I will have 20 paintings. I will have three varying themes, but all related by an idea, like a, you know, a key idea being relationships.
New work?
Yes, all new work. So on the spectrum, let's say if there's a spectrum of subject matter, right in the middle will be pet portraits. How animals affect us in our lives and what they mean to us. And I have horses, dogs, and a cat. So on the one end of the spectrum will be more of a lighthearted kind of world that I've created in my head. That is the world of Lucille's dog toys. My dog is Lucille. And so literally one day, the first painting I ever did of her dog toys, it was one I just finished last year. And I started this piece years ago, but I just never had, like I was saying earlier, like you want to be at a level where my skill set years ago wasn't where I wanted it to be in order to finish that painting. And it finally got there. But it's just, I walked into our living room one day and she had,
She literally, that painting
was that layout. So that's what started that. So there will be a series of her paintings or paintings of her toys, her world. And then the other one is a little more somber in theory, but it's, Larry, you saw the painting last year. It's taxidermy pieces. It's taxidermy as still life.
Right.
So there's a whole story behind that too.
Well, we unfortunately have to wrap it up with you, Denise. Tell us how people can contact you and find out your website and any other contact information.
Website is denisepeterson.com, and Peterson is P-E-T-E-R-S-E-N, not O-N. Denisepeterson.com, or you can find me on Instagram at Denise Peterson Studio.
That's great. And they can also, on our website, click on your picture and it'll take you to your website. Denise Peterson, who will be having an exhibit at South Shore Arts Atrium Gallery coming up in September. Thank you so much for coming on Art of the Air and sharing your art journey and your art.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah, it was a complete pleasure. Thank you.
Thank you.
Art on the Air is supported by an Indiana Arts Commission Arts Project Grant, South Shore Arts, and the National Endowment for the Arts.
This is Emily Yanez, Executive Director for the LaPorte County Symphony Orchestra, and you're listening to Art on the Air on Lakeshore Public Media, 89.1 FM, and on WVLP 103.1 FM.
We are very pleased to welcome back Nick Orbovich to Art on the Air. He was last with us on February 11th of 2022. Nick is an award-winning concert violinist and has competed all over the world. His highly acclaimed career spans a wide variety of musical styles and genres. Nick and his wife, Sunny, co-founded the Michigan City Chamber Music Festival. It is a yearly free offering to the region featuring world-class musicians. Plus, there are two dedicated educational programs for children. Thank you for joining us again, Nick. Aloha and welcome. It is so great seeing you.
Wonderful to be back. Thank you for having me.
Well, Nick, in case people don't want to go back and listen to your previous interview, we're going to re-explore your past, like I said, your origin story, and we'll say how you got from where you were to where you're now. So tell us all about Nick.
Well, I have to really say, I have to give all credit to my parents. I was lucky enough to go to a school that had an orchestra program. Without that, I would never have been introduced to the violin, so I give thanks to that. That was in Steubenville, Ohio. One day, the orchestra director came into our fourth grade classroom, asked if anybody might want to try this weird-looking instrument called a violin. I said I would like to try it. And so, very quickly, I showed some ability for it. Took it home that night, and my parents right then decided that they would support my efforts here. And they found me good private teachers. Some of them were not very close, so it took quite a bit from them. So without the parents, without that support, you know, excellence is not possible, you know, without support, without recognition from parents, from community, from the schools. If you don't have that, it just cannot happen. So I was very fortunate. A lot of the reason I got here today is purely due to circumstance, having good parents, having a school system that mattered.
So Nick, did you experiment with other instruments, or was it always the violin?
It was always the violin.
That's wonderful.
And maybe occasionally the viola?
Occasionally. today I play a little viola on the side. I remember at the beginning I wanted to learn how to play guitar, and then whenever I found the violin, I just forgot all about the guitar.
And you know the old joke about the viola, right? That if you have a violin and viola, the viola burns longer but holds more beer, right?
Right. There's a lot of old jokes.
I know. The poor viola, they're like the altos of vocals. You know, they say they just get wrapped up.
That's exactly right.
So in your youth, you're doing, you're playing the violin. Tell us how that progressed, like through your teen years and everything like that, getting up later on in life.
Takes a lot of practice. You know, people use the word talent. They say, oh, you're so talented. I do appreciate that, you know. But what really mattered was how much work you put into it. And I prefer to, my colleagues and good students call them skilled. So I had excellent teachers, again, circumstance. And, you know, I practiced, and especially in my junior and senior years, I was up at 5 a.m. practicing so I could get into, a conservatory. It was a long shot for me, then it ended up working out okay. Played in a local youth orchestra. Just those are the steps you take. You know, you need to have good private teachers. Being self-taught on violin, classical violin, there really is no such thing. You can't teach yourself something you don't know. there was so much I didn't know. There's so much I do not know right now. You know, I'm still learning to play this silly instrument called the violin.
So what type of practice schedule do you maintain now?
Well, I hope to practice every day, especially right now with the Chamber Music Festival coming up. Right now, I just put down the violin to do this interview. I was practicing right beforehand. What's important for musicians, I think, is that you don't try and grind it out for hours and hours and hours and hours. You know, you put in a good amount and you do need to take a break. Go do something else. Maybe, we all have lots of things to do, right? Go do something else. Take care of something else. Come back. Practice some more. You know, I tell students, if you can, they've got a full day of school. Practice some in the morning. Practice some in the evening. You know, if you can, break it up that way. It's better for, I think you'll learn more that way too. Your brain gets to do some work on its own while you're away from that busy work of finger.
Something I've been always wanting to ask a violinist is, and I know it's kind of a technique thing, but maybe you could explain more in detail, the technique between what we call the violin type playing you do and fiddling. I mean, I think fiddling can be probably somewhat learned on your own, but, give us your opinion on that.
Yeah, I still think if you're a fiddler, you need someone to show you how to do it. I mean, I don't know of any fiddlers that just picked it up and started doing it on their own. I know they all had mentors and people that showed them where the fingers go, how the strings are tuned. And it's a totally, there's some very different techniques. Between the two instruments, there's no difference.
Right.
Four strings, they're hollow wood, the bow has horsehair on it, It's all the style of music, that's what it is. Fiddling has roots back from Europe, for centuries, Irish, Scottish, French troubadours, Eastern Europeans, Hungarian, Bulgarian, Romanian influences, very, very ancient, influences there, And while there are similarities, each one of them, pretty individual. Classical music, is very based on form, meaning the form of the piece. Like, is it sonata allegro form? Is it a fugue? Is it a theme and variation? Is it a concertina, over and over? What is it? And that you kind of have to know what it is so that the style is correct.
I know when you read about all the different styles and genres that you play, I can see all the work that goes into it and how you have to really dedicate your life to it.
Right.
I see in your, and I think we probably talked about this in your previous interview, were you involved with the Tamboritsons when you were at Duquesne University?
No, I was not. However, I did play a lot of tamboritsa music with five-piece bands. And when I was in high school, we had a little tamboritsa ensemble. So, a lot of Serbian, Croatian folk music. The Duquesne University Tambourists, I was not with them. Yeah. I had a few friends in that group, though.
Yeah, I thought, they always seem like they're really out scouting, because I used to have them, actually in both of my theaters for their annual event, and they always seemed like they were scouting for talented musicians to be part of that. So, but that's interesting. So, do you have, I know that you'll probably say chamber music is your favorite genre, but tell us about your favorite genre of music.
Hard to say. I guess certain composers, obviously, what we call classical music is, my specialty. There's no single type of music that I dislike completely. There's terrific music in all genres. If you say, oh, I just don't like that. I don't like country western, or I don't like rap, or I don't like rock. I can't say your listening skills are that sophisticated. There's good stuff in all genres of music. My favorite is classical. It's my calling, and my passion. And that's what I've dedicated my life is to sharing that music to as many people as I can. And with the Michigan City Chamber Music Festival, which is starting August 9th, we're dedicated to showing the best musicians in the world playing the greatest music ever written for free. All our concerts are free. And that's an important, part of our chamber music series.
One other thing I wanted to talk, I have a good friend of mine who I know plays electric violin, and she does jazz primarily, or pretty much jazz. What's your thoughts on that, electric? And I mean, they've completely redesigned with this, and there's no soundboard anymore, but have you ever experimented with that, or what do you think about it?
Oh, quite a bit, yeah. I don't own an electric violin. My good friend Rudolph Honkin at the University of Illinois is the director of the electronic strings department, and he went totally electric. He was an acoustic violist for his entire life. And then almost 60 years old, he switched over to electric instruments. And, they're wonderful. There's not much difference. Now, you can have many more strings on an electric instrument, because the acoustic is so much different. If you put too many strings on a wooden box, then they start cannibalizing themselves and it just doesn't sound good. On an electric instrument, I've seen 12-stringed instruments that go under your chin. Now that's way too many for me. I can't figure those out, But, if you get more than four for me, I'm like, huh? So, but a 4-string electric instrument, I think, is great. There's a lot of possibilities there.
Yeah, he sure puts on a fun video.
Yes, he does.
So this year's chamber theme is quite wonderful, Worldwide Women. So yeah. Can you expand on that?
I'm very proud of this year's theme. And, throughout the centuries, there have been incredible female composers and musicians in this classical music genre. Sometimes during their life, they got recognition, but almost always they were not remembered. For instance, Mozart's sister is pretty well regarded now that she was probably a greater talent than he was. Whenever she got old enough to pursue professional career, she just wasn't allowed by societal means, by societal norms. Women could not do that, only men. There's some famous minuets by Johann Sebastian Bach, the great minuets in G, that for centuries he was credited with writing them. He did not write them. His second wife, Anna Magdalena Bach, bah, bah, bee, bah, 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 bee, bah, bah, the famous minuet there, she wrote them. She wrote them for keyboard and she wrote them for students. And so lately, in the last few years, I've seen they are beginning to give her credit for this. In the first concert, which is Italian Night, we're going around the world showing all the women that have been forgotten, and we have a world premiere by Alyssa Morris on August 11th. We're very proud of that. She's a very important female composer. On the final concert on August 17th, come out for that one. That's an afternoon in old Vienna, we're calling it. And it's a little, this is pretty amazing. We've heard of the composer Robert Schumann. Hmm. His wife, Clara Schumann, was more than likely a greater pianist and at least an equal composer. And we're presenting a fantastic trio of hers that stands up to any piano trio ever written. And we put that alongside with Mozart's great Carousel 563 Divertimento in E-flat to end the series this year.
So each one of those dates will feature female composers then.
Each one.
Yep. Each one. Yep. Wonderful.
You're listening to Art on the Air on Lakeshore Public Media 89.1 FM on WVLP 103.1 FM.
What about the children's programs?
Right. And on Tuesday, which is August 12th at noon at the Michigan City Public Library, we're calling that From Bach to Beyoncé. We mean Anna Magdalena Bach, not Johann Sebastian. And it's just really female composers and African-American composers throughout history. It's a very fun, light, you know, energetic program. Kids would love it. On the 16th, August 16th, a Saturday at 2 o'clock, we are at the Lubeznik Center. And we're featuring great music of Mozart, along with Hans Christian Andersen Fairy Tales. A delightful, just amazing, beautiful program that kids of all ages will love that.
Now, the program is underwritten, I think, by an Indian Arts Commission grant, but do you have other people that support this? I mean, this has got to be quite expensive to bring these kind of world-class artists in to perform.
Thank you. We are not the only ones, but this is the first year in our existence where we've gotten no money from grants.
Oh.
And it is mostly through the political arena that we're in. Grantors have just pulled back and are not giving out money. So everything we've gotten has been through private donation. Usually 70% of artistic organizations are covered through private donation. And then that 30% is kind of divided equally between ticket sales and grants. So 12, 15%. Well, it's changed. We've never had ticket sales, but right. We've never had that income. And now everything has to come from private donation. So we are, you know, really, really hitting the bricks, raising money for this. And we, as all arts organizations out there, are very frightened about the future. You know, we can pay the bills this year, mostly from our fundraising last year, but we don't know what's going to happen for us next year. And next year is our 25th anniversary, and we're not sure we're going to be able to put a festival on.
Oh, that'd be tragic. I mean, but yeah, you're right. I know the poor Indiana Arts Commission got cut by 33%. So grantees are still waiting to find out if they're going to get a grant or if it's going to be reduced from what they asked for. So yeah, that would be a shame to see this festival that are almost 24 years here and going away. But maybe that can be a pitch you make at each one of these events.
Well, and I'm even doing it now, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, so absolutely. You know, if you think what we do is worthwhile, you know, think about helping us out. Whatever, you know, we'll take anything, a dollar check, or if you want to come volunteer for us, we can do that too.
Is there a donation thing on your website?
There certainly is. Our website, MCCMF, as in Michigan City Chamber Music Festival, .org, MCCMF.org. And right on the homepage, there is a donate button. Just click on that. It'll take you right to the page.
That's excellent. And we'll also have a link on your picture on our website. So when they click on it, it'll take you right to that. So it'll be great.
Oh, that's only going to help us. Thank you, Larry.
Right.
So with the 25th coming up, and you did say just now that it's unsure, but that you are going to start planning that. Have you started planning? Have you started planning?
Oh, yeah, a little bit. We're going to have a world premiere by a wonderful African-American female composer who is actually an ex-student of mine at a summer festival. Me and our other violinist, Zosha, we remember her from the South Bend Festival.
Yeah.
She was a violin student then. And when she went into college, she kind of got the calling to be a composer. And she is quite the success. She has won awards in France, in Paris, in France, in the Czech Republic. And she's had world premieres all over the world. Her name is Jessica Carter. And we're going to play a piece by her at that festival. We're also probably going to harken back to just some of our great memories over the past 25 years, you know, repeat some repertoire and definitely some more new repertoire.
Some fan favorites, huh?
Sure, sure.
Well, and you're accommodated by the First Presbyterian Church. They've been the home of yours, I think, for the whole time of the whole 24 years.
For most of that, yes, yes.
Most of it.
The last 20 years, yeah, pretty exclusively for our big concerts. Yes, yes. It's a wonderful space to play in. They have excellent acoustics, and we're happy to be there. We're very grateful to them.
So, outside of the festival, what's on your concert schedule?
Well, I play quite a bit. I play with a lot of different orchestras. I'm concert master of the Whiting Park Festival Orchestra. And we have concerts this weekend and actually 2 weeks after that. Concert master of the Lincolnwood Chamber Orchestra in Chicago. Concert master of the local Michigan City Messiah Orchestra. And I'm an associate concert master of the Jackson Symphony Orchestra in Michigan outside of Ann Arbor. So outside of that, I sub around with many orchestras. And then I do some solo and chamber playing outside of that.
Still with the South Bend Orchestra?
No, I retired from South Bend about 3 years ago.
Oh.
I had been there for 33 years.
Yeah. However,
I feel like I still play with them as they call me to come sub almost every time. So I'm there quite a bit.
For a young musician, and I think you've kind of touched on this, but, you know, how do you get to Carnegie Hall, the old joke, you know, practice, practice, practice. But what advice would you have, one, if they maybe don't want to do it professionally, but want to be a musician to the point that, like, in a community or band, orchestra, or something like that, and then for those that really want to pursue a true professional career, what's your advice?
Very, very important. You know, it is important to find a good team. Always ask for credentials. Ask to see the resume. Ask to see the bio. Don't just take the first name that somebody recommends. And then from there, you know, just see where it goes. You know, do what the teacher tells you to do if you're the student. Practice every day. That's very important. Don't try to make up for it in one practice session at the end of the week. Even if it's only 5 minutes every day, make sure you touch that instrument every day. It's very important.
I'll agree with that.
Yeah, yeah, you have to actually stay engaged with the, and that's true of almost anything that you want to really pursue, either as an avocation or a vocation. You need to do that. I know many people may know this, but the difference between going to, let's say, a regular university program versus a conservatory. Tell us about the differences in that process.
Conservatories usually are defined just that they are a separate, you know, building entity themselves from a major university. But honestly, you know, many major universities are as good as any conservatory. For instance, you know, IU in Bloomington, that's one of the very best music schools in the world, you know, even up there with Paris Conservatory, you know, or Juilliard. Ann Arbor in Michigan, same thing with them. And there's many, many really fine schools around. not sure what the closest conservatory to us is. I know up in Eastman in Rochester, New York, Curtis Institute in Philadelphia, you know, these are some of the elite schools, but, you know, they are not better than, you know, Bloomington, Indiana or Ann Arbor, Michigan. You know, these state schools are also excellent.
That's great advice.
Yeah, it's in, yes, it is. And I guess you need you touched on this also, but the real goal is to find a teacher that you connect with. You know, they may, you know, and it may take some trials. You might try one and try another, but, you know, kind of audition your teacher because you need to be spending time with them for a long period of time.
Yeah, it's a magic fit.
Yeah, being a good teacher, you know, it can be challenging. You know, my best teachers kept reminding me that, you know, one day I will not have a teacher. I'm going to have to learn how to teach myself. And my best teachers taught me how to teach myself. You know, I did not know how to teach myself until I worked with them. And, you know, today I know a little bit more about that, and I'm still learning. I'm still learning that lesson. So,
Well, in our final minute here, we want you to have a chance to recap how they can find out about the festival, dates, and everything. Even though this will, on the radio, air toward the end, it'll be available for a lot of our podcast listeners well before that.
Sure. Thank you, Larry. So the best way to find out about us is through our website, mccmf.org. You can also follow us on Facebook at Michigan City Chamber Music Festival. You can also follow us and see some past performances on our YouTube page, also Michigan City Chamber Music Festival.
So give it a chance. It's a long time, 24th year, and with support, hopefully generate a 25th year. Thank you for coming on the air. That's Nick Orbovich. Thank you for coming on and sharing about the Michigan City Festival this year and your whole pursuit.
Well, thank you for having me, Larry, and Esther. Thank you so much.
Oh, Nick, thank you very much.
You bet.
We'd like to thank our guests this week on Art on the Air, our weekly program covering the arts and arts events throughout Northwest Indiana and beyond. Art on the Air is heard Sunday at 7 p.m. on Lakeshore Public Media, 89.1 FM, also streaming live at lakeshorepublicmedia.org, and is available on Lakeshore Public Media's website as a podcast. Art on the Air is also heard Friday at 11 a.m. and Monday at 5 p.m. on WVLP 103.1 FM, streaming live at wvlp.org. If you have a smart speaker like Amazon Alexa, Google Assistant, or Apple Siri, just tell to play Art on the Air to hear the latest episode. Our spotlight interviews are heard every Wednesday on Lakeshore Public Media. Thanks to Dee Dotson, Vice President of Radio Operations for Lakeshore Public Media, and to Greg Kovach, WVLP's Station Manager. Our theme music is by Billy Foster with a vocal by Renee Foster. Art on the Air is supported by an Indiana Arts Commission Arts Project Grant, South Shore Arts, and the National Endowment for the Arts. We'd like to thank our current underwriters for Lakeshore Public Media, Ember Forge Consulting, Thoughtful Marketing and Digital Learning, built to express your purpose and grow your reach. Learn more at emberforgeconsulting.com/grow. And for WVLP, Walt Reitinger of Paragon Investments. So we may continue to bring you Art in the Air, we rely on you, our listeners and underwriters, for ongoing financial support. If you're looking to support Art in the Air, we have information on our website at breck.com/AOTA, where you can find out how to become a supporter or underwriter of our program in whatever amount you are able. And like I say every week, don't give till it hurts. Give till it feels good. You'll feel so good about supporting Art on the Air. If you're interested in being a guest or sending us information about your arts, arts-related event, or exhibit, please email us at AOTA@breck.com. That's AOTA@breck.com, or contact us through our Facebook page. Your hosts were Larry Breckner and Esther Golden, and we invite you back next week for another episode of Art on the Air.
Aloha, everyone. Have a splendid week.
Express yourself through art and show the world your heart. Express yourself through art and show the world your heart. You're in the know with Esther and Larry. Art on the Air. Show the world your heart. Express yourself through art. And show the world your heart. Express yourself through art. And show the world your heart. Express yourself through art. And show the world.